The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Hey folks, Bob here to tell you about the best soap in the universe. It's time for this week's Bubble Genius Showcase item of the week. February is Think Spring Month at BubbleGenius.com, just in time for Valentine's Day gift giving. Instead of the same boring old flowers and chocolates, why not pick up their Spell It Out Valentine Heart Soap gift pack? It's three delicious-looking soaps shaped like Valentine's candy hearts in pastel candy colors of green, pink, and yellow, and are all cherry scents. Only $15 at BubbleGenius.com, but if you use our promo code BobAndChez, that's B-O-B-A-N-D-C-H-E-Z, you'll get 15% off your entire order only at BubbleGenius.com.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
So you're out in the woods taking a shit, and a wild boar comes charging at you. Now do you pull your britches up and run? Or do you try to pull your britches up and grab the doves you just shot? And then try to run, all at the same time? Or do you just forget about the fucking doves, pull your britches up and run, because you ain't got time to aim and button your fly? And if you miss, well, you don't want to die with your dick hanging out. You see what I'm saying?
I think I speak for everyone in the room when I say no.
Coming or going, can be radioing. Radio is everywhere.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
It is Tuesday, February 2, 2016, and this is the Bob and Chez Show presented by BubbleGenius.com. I'm Bob, that's Chez. Right over there.
Hello.
Hi. We're brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. It's the best goddamn soap in the world. Also brought to you by the Bowen Law Group and attorney Charles J. Bowen. Get free legal advice at thebowenlawgroup.com/Bob and Chez or click the link on the podcast page. You can't miss it. Charles Bowen sitting on his desk holding an old-timey phone, but his technologies are certainly modern, and he will be able to help you with all of your legal challenges. Okay. Well, we're going to just dive right the hell in, because obviously Iowa caucus last night, lots of controversy, some unexpected results, obviously lots of delusion, a lot of religious demagoguery, a lot of sour grapes, lots of to get to on the show today as far as the Iowa caucus. So it's going to be, I mean, if you're not interested in, like, electoral politics, I don't know why the hell you're listening to the show in the first place. But the entire show today is going to be Iowa caucus. And our complete reaction and recap of everything that happened last night in Iowa. I don't even know where to begin, I guess.
And now the good news is that we get to go back to another, you know, three and a half years of nobody giving a shit about Iowa.
That's right.
Nobody cares about Iowa. As a state, nobody cares about Iowa.
Right. Did you see the videotape of the Trump supporters crying last night? Just
I
like,
no, I heard about it. I didn't see it.
That was fun to watch.
I heard that the quote was something like, he was going to make America great again. It said so on his hat.
Right, yeah. Well, we're going to talk about
like,
Trump here.
A reporter, I can't remember who tweeted that out, said that the woman next to me is crying and said through tears he was going to make America great again.
It's unbelievable. You know, the Iowa caucus did not determine the nominee of either party. I don't know if people are aware of that.
Yeah, and it's funny because the Iowa caucus traditionally, at least over the past several past few elections, have really, you know, they produced what? The results have been nothing.
Yeah. Well, at least on the Republican side.
Because we all remember the hugely successful presidencies of Rick Santorum and Mike Huckabee.
That's right. I also wanted to mention along those lines, too. Remember, Marco Rubio last night, and this is sort of, we're burying the lead by talking about this first, but Marco Rubio in his third place victory speech, somehow, last night, was kind of funny to watch, not only because he basically played, like, completely horked wholesale Obama's Iowa victory speech from 2008.
Yeah.
But also because, you know, the third place winners in Iowa haven't gone on to do much. If you're talking about third place, we're talking about Alan Keyes came in third place in Iowa. Ron Paul came in third place in Iowa. There's very little shot of Marco Rubio suddenly taking off and becoming the front runner. I don't really see it. And again, we're going to talk about Trump's fortunes moving forward here in a little bit. But as far as Rubio goes, the best he can hope for at this point is what's probably going to happen, which is a vice presidential nomination by whoever the nominee happens to be on the Republican side, obviously. I mean, I think Marco Rubio is perfectly positioned as a VP candidate, and he has to wait. I mean, the Republican Party is all about waiting your turn.
Yeah.
I mean, Trump being obviously the outlier, but the Republicans are all about.
But the establishment is behind Rubio. So did you hear, like, they're like, oh, good for you, Marco. But, you know, big pat on the back for the little guy.
That is
because
true.
Because they really want him. He's the only hope for, like, an establishment candidate.
I mean, how astonishing. I guess we'll talk about Trump at the outset here. I mean, how astonishing would it be if Trump's poll numbers suddenly started dropping just before each primary in which he's leading? Like, suddenly, like, we're going into New Hampshire. He's got a massive lead in New Hampshire, at least according to Nate Silver. And then suddenly, right before New Hampshire, like, say, like, Thursday or Friday, his numbers start tailing off. Like, they just completely start to disintegrate.
You know, I mean, I read somebody, somebody made a really good comment where they said that traditionally, voters for kind of insane candidates, they get really, really riled up and they make a big stink, and those candidates poll really well. But when the time comes, those people either stay home or they change their mind and err on the side of caution.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. And the other thing that I think that you just brought up that I think is hugely important is Trump's entire shtick. The whole raison d'etre of his campaign is the fact that he wins. He's a winner. He's a big winner. Trump doesn't lose. The reason that, you know, it's a self-reinforcing thing in his campaign that he can say whatever he wants and do whatever he wants and never pay a price for it because of the fact that he's a winner.
That's right.
And last night, he wasn't a winner. He lost. And it's I can see where people were crying about it because that really takes a lot of the sort of mythos of Donald Trump out of his campaign. It really takes the wind out of the sails.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can't go around saying America doesn't win anymore and then not win.
And then lose.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the thing. That's his whole thing. His entire the existence, the reason for the existence of his campaign is so that he can show everybody that he's going to make America great again because he doesn't lose.
That's right.
We're going to have so much winning, you're going to get tired of winning.
Yep.
Well, Trump's a loser now.
You're going to have so much winning, you're going to get tired of winning, except when I lose. And then you'll be craving winning.
Right. And it's funny because I wrote about that last night. I put that up on Bander almost immediately. And I said, I'm like, you know, Trump goes on angry Twitter tirade against the entire state of Iowa in 3-2-1. And he was very gracious, surprisingly gracious in his sort of concession speech. And I'm the whole time I'm just sitting there, I'm like, wait for it. Just wait till like 4 a.m. comes around and Trump is still up. You know, he's got his robe open and like a bottle of bourbon sitting on his fat stomach.
Right.
And it dawns on him that he lost.
Exactly.
And of course, that's exactly what happened. He just went off and he blamed the media and he blamed the voters for not giving him credit for financing his own campaign. Mm-hmm. And he said that they weren't worth it. And it's just, of course.
There'll be so much winning except for last night.
We will have so much winning if I get elected that you may get bored with winning.
Oh, I see. That's the caveat. He'll say, well, if I get elected.
If I get elected.
If I don't get elected, we won't have any winning.
Meantime, it's hit or miss. But the fact of the matter is, I still strongly believe that Trump is going to win the nomination. I mean, just looking at the poll numbers, I mean, I don't see.
It's entirely possible.
There'd really have to be a change. And last night, I went through this phase for a very brief period of time where I was going, well, maybe they're right. Maybe there's all the people who are saying that all of the precedent, all of the history, all of the math goes out the window because of the existence of Trump, because of the existence of Bernie Sanders. None of the stuff that we talk about for years and years and years, election after election, matters anymore. And I kind of went through that phase. And then I fell back. I said, you know what? Nate was still 50-50. I got to give it to Nate Silver last night. I mean, at first I was like, is he wrong on both the Democratic and Republican side? Because he called, at least the chances of winning were inaccurate with Nate Silver on the Republican side. And on the Democratic side, it turned out that he was right, although the margin was obviously much more narrow, and we're going to talk about that coming up. But as far as Trump's fortunes moving forward, anyone who believes that Ted Cruz is now the front runner is sadly mistaken and sadly ignoring history. And again, I don't know. Maybe history is irrelevant. Maybe the fact that Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum winning the Iowa caucus as precedent is completely irrelevant when it comes to Ted Cruz winning the Iowa caucus. But they're all, hyper-religious zealots, far-right candidates. And it seems to me as if they don't go on to do anything else after that. So it's good. So that leaves Trump in New Hampshire, Trump in South Carolina, Trump in Florida, Trump on Super Tuesday. It's going to be a lot of Trump, a lot of Trump winning. I hate to say it. There's going to be so much winning. We're going to get tired of winning.
We will have so much winning if I get elected that you may get bored with winning.
By the way, that bravado right there, that arrogance, that sure attitude of his, completely gone last night.
Yeah, I know.
It was awesome.
It's a beautiful thing to watch.
I was kind of surprised with his non-victor, with his second place speech, that he was, he was kind of humbled. I mean, it was weird to see that.
Yeah.
But I think now that we're really beginning to absorb the idea of potential president Ted Cruz, for some reason, we talked about this on our free after party last week. By the way, thanks to everyone who downloaded the free after party on Friday.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is that Trump is looking like a cuddly, cuddly teddy bear next to Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz is a monster.
His speech last night, I didn't do the count and I didn't verify this sentence by sentence, but I'm pretty sure that just about every sentence that Ted Cruz uttered in his victory speech last night had some sort of religious reference to it. Now, it may have been an overt religious reference. I know there was a huge chunk in which he was thanking religious zealots like James Dobson and all those people.
That's the thing. I mean, he won by appealing to Iowa evangelicals.
Mm-hmm.
He got out the vote big time with them. And so that was his sort of, that's his fan service.
That's right. And so, he was even incorporating words like testament in there. Little bitty dog whistles in some of the sentences, but some of the sentences were outright, just the usual far-right religious zealotry.
Theocratic bluster.
Theocratic bluster is exactly right. I really liked, in particular, I really liked Patton Oswalt's tweet about Ted Cruz's victory speech, which was...
I didn't see it.
Hark, 1,000 burning angels claw the maggoty lip of the sky. The night wolves come. And he said, this Cruz speech is inspiring. # Iowa caucus. Hark, 1,000 burning angels claw the maggoty lip of the sky. The night wolves come. Outstanding.
I saw him on Sunday.
I was thinking this last night, watching Ted Cruz deliver his victory speech. You remember that? You ever watched the Larry Sanders Show, the old HBO show, the Larry Sanders Show with Gary Shanley?
Yeah.
There was an episode. It was my favorite episode of the series. It's when Larry throws his back out and he's high at home on Vicodin.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can't get any substitute host to come in at the last minute. So they get Hank, Jeffrey Tambor, to host the show. And he does okay in his first outing as the guest host of the show. And then Larry says, you don't understand. Now he's going to be a phenomenal a-hole because he had that one success. Ted Cruz was already an a-hole, much like the Hank Kingsley character in the Larry Sanders Show. And now he's going to be a phenomenal a-hole.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be. Yeah. I mean, everything from the sort of the religious speak that made it sound like he had been, you know, ordained by God. Exactly. Yeah. You know, that this was a this was given to him. It's from heaven.
And even, yeah. You know what? I mean, the clip that's been going around, I think, the most, I mean, people are emailing it to me all the time. It's that clip of Ted Cruz getting dissed by his own daughter. He's trying to kiss his daughter, and his daughter's like, ew, get away, get away.
Yeah, oh, I love it.
This is the best clip of Ted Cruz video I've ever seen. There's no audio to it, so it doesn't make any point to play it on the show. But it's ultimately exactly what not only the Republican establishment thinks of Ted Cruz, but everyone else in the entire world is like that.
Nobody likes Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is just despised.
He is despised
in Washington.
I can't possibly see Ted Cruz going on, knowing that, and then also looking at the poll numbers. I can't see Ted Cruz doing what he did last night really ever again. I mean, there's going to be some deeply red states. I mean, maybe Ted Cruz wins the Utah primary. Maybe he wins in Kansas or something. I don't see Ted Cruz winning any place else, really. This is pretty much it for him.
Yeah. But enjoy your minute in the sun.
Yeah, exactly. And even still, it's going to be like, even with just that one victory and nothing else, Ted Cruz just dialed it up to 11. It's going to be, his ego is going to be on 11 from now on. And absolutely, it's just going to be, well, you know what? It's going to be fun for us because we'll get to make fun of it. But ultimately, we're going to want to claw our eyeballs out.
Yeah, and it's going to be everything that all those people who knew him when he was at Princeton, you know, who knew him throughout high school, who've come out of the woodwork to say he was just always a raging an imperious
exactly.
All those people are going to be proven right. Like, that's we're right. All going to get to see what those people were talking about.
We're going to talk about the Democratic side after we do this. All right, it's Harry's Razors. Last night, I took a break from the Iowa caucus coverage and went down to the store to get, you know, dinner supplies and other crap. And as I was passing through the shaving aisle, I had to stop and laugh to myself while there were these two guys with horrendous facial hair waiting impatiently for a clerk to unlock the protective glass in order to just buy some razor blades for shaving. Seriously, how absurd and humiliating is that? Waiting for someone to open a glass case for razors and then paying way too much for those razors. We're screwed on either side of the glass, guys. But now there's Harry's Razors, where you're going to get factory direct prices. That's half the price of the leading brand, but twice the quality. Harry's starter sets are an amazing deal. For just $15, you get a razor, moisturizing shave cream, and three razor blades. Harry's is totally rebooting the shaving industry, and you can be a part of it. By the way, women love Harry's, too, for their armpits and legs. Go to harrys.com, enter the promo code BANDC, that's BNC for Bob and Chez, for just $5 off your first Harry's shave. Plus, you'll be supporting the show by taking good care of your face and your legs with Harry's Razors. That's HARRYS.com.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
They say we're young and we don't know, we won't find out until we grow. Well, I don't know.
All right, welcome back to the show.
You
it
got
is
me, baby, I got you.
Groundhog Day, isn't it? Is today Groundhog Day? I think it is.
It is Groundhog Day.
By the way, 29 days in February this year. Also a leap year. Is that what a leap year is? The 29 days in February?
Yeah,
that's a leap
29
year?
29 days in February.
Have you ever known anyone who was born on the 29th of February?
No, I've always wanted to have that. You have a birthday every, what, 4 years?
Yeah, that's right. That would be awesome. Anyway, so let's get into this because, well, we haven't made enough enemies yet.
I am like, I might be the most hated person on the internet.
I think so. Have you purchased the Kevlar yet?
Oh my God. Those two pieces that I wrote, the one defending Hillary Clinton from the sort of decades of GOP slime.
That's right.
And the other one, the old piece that I wrote back in September, basically saying, look, you know what, Bernie Sanders, supporters, those who are very, very zealous, you're going to turn on Bernie if he gets elected president. The same way you had the sort of emo progressive demographic, which is Bernie's people, the same way they turned on Obama.
Yep.
Because in order to govern, you you have no choice but to compromise. And the second Bernie realizes that and he picks his battles and he does something they don't like, they're going to freak the hell out. But those two pieces that I wrote, between them, I think have something like 2,000 comments and upwards of like 250,000 hits.
Right, right. And I'm sure as you were watching last night, I'm sure you were like, man, you're watching that number of like, basically a margin of 3 or 4 precinct level delegates between the two, between Hillary and Bernie.
Yeah.
It was really tight there. And
it's incredibly close.
Yeah.
And Bernie, by the way, Bernie, you know what? Huge victory lap for him.
That is true.
Honestly. I mean, when you think of where Sanders was, you know, 8 months ago, 9 months ago, whatever, you know, when you think of that and you compare it to how he did last night, mm-hmm. against a candidate as powerful and as honestly as sort of ready for the job, which is what you hear a lot of her supporters saying,
yeah.
as Clinton, that's an amazing thing.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what he started with a deficit of something like 58 points.
Yeah.
And came back to within basically a wafer thin margin at the precinct level. And then
Clinton won. She did, but
Clinton
by
won, yeah.
a paper thin margin,
and then, but actually, the way the delegates get apportioned, the state level delegates, it turned out to be Hillary with 30 and Bernie Sanders with 21.
Yeah.
So that kind of those numbers don't give you a necessarily accurate read in terms of how close. Right. It really was. But if you were following last night, it was a nail biter.
I mean, it was absolutely insane.
But at no point was Bernie ever able to overtake, even by one delegate, Hillary Clinton's lead. Because I remember it started out, I think the entrance polls were showing something like 53-46 in Hillary Clinton's favor. And that was the overall percentage. And then that started to narrow. And then they started doing it based on the not the percentage of votes, but specifically the precinct level delegates and how they were being apportioned. So as they were climbing closer and closer to 700, with the top candidate getting to 700, it was getting tighter and tighter. It would shift between 3 and 4. At one point, it was 11. I went out to as you heard as I was talking about Harry's Razors there. I went out to the store to grab some food, and they came back, and suddenly there was an 11-point margin from there being a 3-point margin. So, like, well, something happened there. And then I found out later that there was a mistake, and so they gave those delegates back to Bernie Sanders, I guess, or took them away from Hillary. I'm not sure exactly how that worked. But so, yeah, it was tough. And by the way, it was, I don't know, 1 o'clock in the morning Pacific time, and somehow Brian Williams and Rachel Maddow were still on the air. I don't know how they did it, because they had been on the air since it seemed like 4 o'clock yesterday morning.
That's the way it works during election season.
It's insane how long they were. I don't know how they do it. I don't know. I was getting exhausted.
Oh,
just
it's an amazing thing. Like when they gave Lester Holt nightly news.
Yeah.
I was thrilled. And one of the reasons I was thrilled is that I worked with him after 9/11 and he legendarily on MSNBC, he was there constantly. He was always on the air, and when he wasn't on the air, he was back behind the scenes doing stuff.
Right.
I mean, he was a workhorse.
Well, you know, as we've been talking about, the fact that I think many of Bernie's most vocal supporters have been talking about completely upending the system and upending the establishment, it's no wonder why, you know, when these results were so tight, why many of those supporters, of course, not all Bernie supporters, that goes without saying, but some of the Bernie supporters and most vocal ones, some, and obviously the younger ones, were saying things to the effect that, you know, the system is screwed up, that the Iowa Democratic Party screwed them. There's some sort of conspiracy. There's a there are now a series of Bernie supporters who have become coin toss truthers, where, you know, Hillary Clinton won all 6 coin tosses that determined the outcome
and like
of
a
6
US
precincts.
Uncut, US Uncut or one of those fucking websites that does nothing but run pro-Bernie stories, put up something about, here's how statistically unlikely that is, hint, hint.
Right. But, I mean, it's always possible, and it happened. What do you think? Like, Hillary Clinton rigged in advance the coin tosses, thinking that there were, knowing that there would be a coin toss.
Yeah, the one that really bothers me, and I put it up on Facebook a little
while
ago.
By the way, out of 1,600 precincts, she was able to figure out that six of those precincts would have coin tosses and that she should give them double-headed coins in order for her to win those. That's insane. That's like the birth certificate crap.
But that's what that is that's a lot of – you're hearing that from people who have those kind of beliefs regardless because those are they're people who think that way. Mm. They're hardwired to think that way.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really, really obnoxious because, already it's kind of started. It's a conspiracy. Mm. No, it's not. It's not a fucking conspiracy. Yeah. And what bothers me is, again, these are people who think, and this is the reason that I wrote the thing that I wrote earlier this week about Hillary. These are the people who think that Hillary is just pure evil.
Yeah.
She's the political Cthulhu who drives men mad, you know, at the mere sight of her. She's, you know, she's this monster who controls everything, and it's such And the other thing that is really getting to me right now, because I've seen this a lot, and I put it up on Facebook, and I probably should write about it so it goes everywhere.
Yes,
but
please
everybody
do.
Is circulating this video. Mm-hmm. From this video and story that was published at C-SPAN.com or C-SPAN 2, one of them. And it's a video, and underneath the headline on this video is Clinton voter fraud in Polk County, Iowa caucus. Yeah. So people are reading C-SPAN is saying Clinton voter fraud.
Yeah.
And it's this video that shows like nothing,
basically.
Just nothing.
Yeah.
But the important thing to keep in mind with it is that it's not a C-SPAN video. Mm-hmm. It is not a C-SPAN video. It is part of user generated content. It was put up there by a quote unquote anonymous user, obviously some, you know, overzealous Bernie fan who posted this and wrote the headline, which by the way, C-SPAN should immediately remove this feature because it's just ripe for abuse.
Absolutely.
So so basically it's like the way that I put it is any Bernie supporter who's out there watching this and circulating this and saying, you know, why does she have to cheat to win?
Yeah.
You know,
that's not you're not helping. By shouting this.
This is an outrage. I demand an investigation. Turn those machines back on. Turn those machines back on.
Yeah, it just comes off as sour grapes. I mean,
it's sour grapes. Exactly.
And shy of having any actual evidence of some sort of Clinton-backed voter fraud, election fraud, whatever you want to call it, it's there's nothing there. I mean.
But there's everything there. That's the thing. To certain Bernie Sanders fanatics, mm-hmm. to the people who are really far left, his entire campaign, like you said, is about upending the system. And that's the thing. The system, man, is corrupt.
That's right.
The whole thing is corrupt.
Well, as I wrote in Addicting Info today, it doesn't help because, I mean, what Bernie Sanders needs more than anything else at this point, other than in more primary victories, is the support of at least part of the establishment. And he's not getting any support from, and I'm speaking specifically of the Democratic Party establishment. By attacking the Democratic Party as Bernie supporters, all you're doing is making them less likely to support your candidate. And the reason is, he needs those superdelegates who are made up of party officials, senators, congressmen, legislators, and so forth. He needs those people in order to win, because without them, he loses the superdelegates. And
right. But no, he doesn't. But he doesn't, because everybody just needs to feel the burn and, you know, political revolution.
That's true.
I'm not kidding. That is what these people believe. That's what these I swear I don't like to do the kids these days thing. Mm. But these fucking millennials who came out, you know, who made up a substantial portion of those who voted for Bernie yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
God bless them. I'm glad you're politically active, but you do not understand how the world works, how this country works, how its political system works. And Bernie can't just wave a magic wand and get, oh, you know what? A bunch of kids support me. So that's going to be it. That's what's going to make, we're going to go to the White House like that. No, it doesn't work that way. He has to have support from within this party. By the way, this party that he's already behind the eight ball on, because he's not a member of the party.
That's right. I have a very specific observation about the millennial reaction to the results last night. We're going to get to that after a short break, back right after this. Okay, let's talk about supporting independent media. For only $1 a month, you can help finance the Bob and Chez Show at patreon.com/Bob and Chez. That's 12 cents per per show. Go now to patreon.com/Bob and Chez. That's patreon.com/Bob and Chez. And sign up for $1 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, or $15 a month, or whatever you can afford. If you sign up for $5 or more, you'll get special Patreon-only shows like our post-mortem wrap-up show, the Not Safe for Work after-party show, and commercial-free, unbleeped versions of the free Tuesday and Thursday shows. Most of all, you'll be supporting a totally independent podcast not affiliated with corporate media. And if we reach our $7,500 per month goal, we'll bring you new shows 5 days a week, Mondays through Fridays. That's patreon.com/Bob and Chez, or click the Patreon link at bobseska.com. Let's do this thing.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Second half of today's show, as always, brought to you by the BobSeska.com Amazon link. If you shop at Amazon, enter the site using our link just below the logo at BobSeska.com. We get a teeny tiny commission from everything you buy. It costs you nothing and helps support the show. Thank you for that. All right, regarding the millennials who are screaming,
this is an outrage. I demand an investigation. Turn those machines back on. Turn those machines back on.
You know, I just had this, and again, I'm just looking at this. I don't have statistics to back this up. I'll give you that caveat right away. But the fact of the matter is, it seems like the inability to accept the fact that when the final results were counted, Hillary Clinton won by 9 delegates statewide. The millennials are kind of revealing their everybody gets a trophy background. There are no losers in this contest.
Yep.
There are winners and there are losers. You either hit or you don't hit, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no big prize. You know, you don't get second place and still win.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you know, just trying to shave off the corners of the results in order to fit that round peg into the square hole, or whatever you want to, the square peg into the round hole, it comes off as being desperate and flailing.
Yeah,
and
oh, then, it totally does.
And then, as we were saying before, you start to make enemies of the party establishment. You know, if we encourage the Bernie bros, or whatever the hell you want to call them, we encourage them, then they're going to, you know, we give them an inch, they're going to want to take a mile, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The key here is to follow the lead of the candidate himself, Bernie Sanders, who is not challenging the result of Iowa, who's not demanding a recount. And that, of course, is the classy thing to do.
Yeah,
I understand that everyone wants to be a winner.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, as effing insanely tight as it was, to me, that's the real consolation for Bernie Sanders supporters.
Yeah, an incredible, you know, incredible performance last.
That's right.
There is no doubt about that. My concern is that, yeah, and this to me goes to the fact that they're so rabid and they're such believers. This is such a religion for them that the system is f***ed. That when we hit South Carolina and Bernie begins his tailspin, and if the poll numbers hold up, it will happen.
Yeah.
Wait for it.
Yep.
That's it. That's the missile that hits him in midair and he begins plummeting to the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
But when that happens, these people are not going to – the thing that scares me and bothers me is that these people are not going to, okay, we'll go vote for Hillary Clinton.
No.
They're just going to stay at home. They're going to go back to doing whatever the fuck it is that they do with their days. And they're, you know, because Veruca Salt didn't get her Oompa Loompa, they're going to just vanish. And, you know, they're going to sulk and get pissed off. Mm-hmm. And that's going to cost, that could potentially cost the Democrats the election.
That's
which
right.
Which was just outrageous. There aren't words to it is mathematically inexpressible how outrageous that is.
Yeah. I mean, I know. I mean, I'm joking around a lot. We're both joking. I'm not necessarily joking about everything, but, you know, I'm joking when I play this.
This is an outrage. Yeah. I demand an investigation. Turn those machines back on. Turn those machines back on.
But you know what? You know what? Honest to God, I've been there. I remember 2004. The 2004 general election, so clearly. I mean, first of all, that night, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. It was Ohio. that was still contested at that point, but looking really bad for John Kerry. And I remember sitting in my garage, just sobbing, just like, this is, I cannot believe we're staring down the barrel of another 4 years of George W. Bush. I mean, it was soul crushing in every sense of the word.
And I mean, I always thought Kerry was a terrible candidate. He just was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, it was shocking to me that America could give us another 4 years of that idiot.
That's right.
Dangerous idiot.
Exactly. And I remember the next day and the next, probably for the remainder of the week, just being glued to the internet and glued to, at that time, Air America was still on the air. So listening to Air America and just desperate for some sort of shred of news to come out of Ohio. Maybe some precinct captain somewhere found some ballots that weren't counted and they were in a dumpster somewhere and they started to count them. And then suddenly the whole election is turned upside down and John Kerry wins. And I'm just praying for that eventuality, you know, just looking for it. So I know what it's like. And you, at the end of the day, you just have to concede that this is the way American politics functions, and that, yes, we can make improvements as we go. We can resolve something. Like the whole idea of Iowa and New Hampshire being first, you know, it's a matter of tradition now. Doesn't need to happen that way. I mean, the whole caucus process is crazy. I mean, if you're watching it, especially if you're watching it the first time, you see, this is a crazy way. I mean, if you were looking at the Republican side,
and that's another thing, by the way, the millennials, a lot of this is a lot of their first election. How do you say that? Let's reverse it. This is their first election. Yeah, this is their first real exposure to the political system.
Yeah.
And all of it. But, you know, but by the way, let me stop myself right there, because one thing that this does say about millennials, I think, which is really, really, like, when I say millennials, I mean young millennials. I'm talking, you know, early 20s.
Yeah.
The Republican Party is doomed. Just doomed.
Yeah.
Because these kids are really, really fucking liberal.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing. I don't have an issue with that. I mean, I'm probably not as liberal as they are, but, you know, and that can change, by the way, because, you know, the old adage is kind of, you know, in some ways true that, you know, when you get to be around 40, if you're still a liberal, you're kind of crazy, which obviously makes me at least somewhat crazy.
I'm
not
very
totally, but somewhat.
I'm insane. So,
yeah, exactly. But no, I mean, this is pretty much their first exposure to politics. Mm-hmm. And yet they operate as if they, you know, they're dilettantes, but they operate as if they know everything.
Yeah.
And that's why we're getting this. That's why we're getting all of this outrage and this anger and this, you know, yelling and screaming at people who don't agree with them.
Yeah.
Because it's like, as we've said so many times before, well, what's the path to victory? When you try to add up the delegates, when you try to add up the primaries, mm-hmm. when you talk about what we need to do to create a Democratic Congress so that Bernie can push these absolutely insane ideas through. And by the way, in terms of American politics, his ideas are fucking way out there. I'm not saying they're bad. They're not bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, to the average American, you know what? We're going to make college free and we're going to do single-payer health care. That's an incredibly ambitious agenda.
It really, really is.
And when
is,
you bring this up to people and you say, these kids, you say, how are you going to do this? They're just political revolution, feel the burn.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I've got a piece going up on Salon like any second now that lists the three or four things that need to happen long before Bernie Sanders ever achieves his actual agenda. And these are things that may happen within a Bernie Sanders administration. They may end up happening decades from now. It all depends on political will. But you can't have single payer in the near term. You can't have free college education. You can't have, you know, and I know this is all going to get stereotyped. Oh, Bob's telling us we can't have and unicorns and, you know, like, no. In order to actually, I mean, legitimately achieve these goals, breaking up the big banks, reinstating Glass-Steagall, you have to have at least three things occur first. One, you have to ban gerrymandering. Two, you have to ban the filibuster. So this way, Bernie Sanders doesn't need 70 votes in order to pass his agenda, which is an impossible figure to get to, 70 votes in the Senate. And then number three, you have to have public financing of elections. Without these three things, the entire Sanders agenda is kind of a non-starter. Yeah. I mean, there are some lower ticket items that he could ostensibly achieve, but the big things that he's promising, single payer, breaking up the banks, these are things that require congressional votes that aren't there, and they require Senate votes that aren't there with a filibuster. They require members of Congress in both chambers completely unencumbered by campaign donations from corporations, even individuals, lobbyists, and so on. You have to eliminate all that crap. And once you do that, then you've built the superstructure upon which you can put things like single payer and so on. Right. I mean, we're not talking, by the way, when we're talking about single payer, remember what we're talking about with single payer. We're not talking about universal health care, which is what Hillary Clinton is promising, but universal health care via the Affordable Care Act and expanding the Affordable Care Act. Single payer has a very specific meaning, and you want to look at the British system, where there aren't any corporate health insurance companies, where doctors and nurses work for the government. That's how it works in England. That's a single payer system. So you're basically talking about not only large scale tax hikes, which should happen at some point, but large scale tax hikes to pay for a system in which we're eliminating. Yeah. We're basically eliminating health insurance companies. We're basically eliminating private for-profit hospitals and so forth. We're eliminating, in some cases, private medical practices. Mm-hmm. This is going to have massive ripple effects in the economy, much less at the same time breaking up the big banks. We're talking about a series of moves here that are easily going to precipitate a recession. And it doesn't mean it has to be a recession as deep as the one we just got out of, which to me was a depression. We're talking about some sort of recession that is going to be pretty deep.
Yeah.
Because we're completely upending gigantic sectors of the American economy.
And you know what I've noticed with a lot of people when you say that to them, when you give them the facts of like, look, this is what has to be done in order for this political revolution to occur.
Yeah.
You get the, oh, well, you know, so we should just settle, like the snarky, we should just settle for Hillary then instead of dreaming big. Can dream as big as you want.
Yeah.
Feel free to dream. But you need to understand that you will not get that. It right. will not happen.
That's right. And if you're
and if your entire reason for getting into politics, for being interested in politics, is to see that happen right now. I want it right again, Veruca Salt. I want it right now, Daddy.
Exactly.
If that's why you're doing it, you're going to be sorely disappointed. Ideals don't translate into actual action.
Yeah. I mean, instead of screaming,
this is an outrage. Yeah, I demand an investigation. Turn those machines back on. Turn those machines back on.
Instead of screaming that, and while you're talking about the evils of the establishment, let's seriously look at the systemic problems, the systemic hurdles that are preventing a Sanders agenda, and tackle those things. I don't hear Bernie Sanders talking about gerrymandering the filibuster or public financing of elections. He's obviously by using small donations, he's moving the ball in that direction. But I don't see these other things being part of his agenda, and they really should be. They should be top shelf items in the overall progressive movement.
Right.
And it's not happening. It's not happening. It's really frustrating. We're going to talk about this a little more after one last break, back after this.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
This is the Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Buzz. By the way, you can hear Buzz Burbank News and Comment every damn day at the Realm Network. That's RealmNetwork.com. Okay. All right, let's get into this. Did you see the, obviously you were watching, the, I don't know, were you watching CNN or MSNBC last night predominantly?
I flipped on CNN sometimes, I think.
Yeah, I was on MSNBC all damn night, and there was this one location that they kept going to. It was a caucus location. Clearly, it was in Iowa City, clearly on a college campus. It was in a gym, I think, and it was big time for Bernie. And it really, I felt that it gave a false impression of the kind of support Bernie was getting, because it was like, I think the ultimate number ended up being something like 450 Bernie caucus goers to like 90 Hillary caucus goers. And it was a disaster. I mean, that precinct was a disaster for the Clinton campaign.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. But it was kind of to be expected because it was a college campus. So right. They have this guy, obviously a millennial field reporter. I forget the guy's name. And he was covering most of the proceedings at that location. And then they went to this scene that occurred while one of the Bernie Sanders volunteers was trying to convince some undecideds to come over to the Bernie Sanders side of the room. And this Bernie Sanders volunteer, if I was
insufferable,
I mean, again, look, I mean, I'm not pushing either of the Democratic candidates at this point. I'm just watching. My vote only matters when June rolls around and it's the California primary. But at this point, I was looking at this, and if I was a Bernie Sanders supporter, I would have been like, SMH. This, oh my God, this guy.
If you were a Bernie Sanders supporter, you probably would literally say SMH OMG.
Well, yeah, sure. So this Bernie Sanders volunteer was trying to convince this group of young millennial-aged undecideds, including this one woman, looked to be around 20, 21 years old, who happened to be a veteran. And this guy was describing how Bernie Sanders is pushing for income equality and how he wants to level the playing field. Well, it's all well and good to say level the playing field, but if you're going there to actually try to convince undecided caucus goers to caucus with your candidate, it is election night. It is game on. And you decide to go down the road of describing the Bernie Sanders tax plan, you need to know what you're talking about. Otherwise, it comes out really, really stupid. So this guy, I don't have the audio, but this guy basically described the Bernie Sanders tax plan as essentially being a flat tax. I mean, not essentially, literally a flat tax.
Yeah.
He told this undecided caucus goer, quote, okay, so like the percentage you pay is going to be equal no matter how much income you have. That's a flat tax.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders doesn't support a flat tax.
Yep.
So this, and then this undecided veteran went on to blurt out the F word on MSNBC Live.
Awesome.
Here's that scene.
How is he going to fix it? Because I can tell you right now that the VA is more screwed up than it has been in a while. The fact that I haven't gotten benefits in 3 months because the VA is so fucked up really makes me concerned.
Good for
so
you.
How is Bernie going to fix it?
That was
good for you.
There, of course, that's bleeped, but she actually said
good
aft.
For you. Awesome. I love
she
it.
Said aft. Unbelievable. So that's that. That was really just frustrating to watch. Again, you know, if you're going to talk about the tax plan, make sure you know what you're talking about. Otherwise, you're going to have a bunch of Bernie caucus goers, Bernie primary voters saying, hey, you know, that flat tax is not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Just not, yeah. Not, yeah. Not.
And
not
I mean, smart. And again, not all Bernie Sanders.
No, nope, not all
I
Bernie
don't believe,
Sanders.
I don't believe this, but there is a... Watch, listening to that and seeing the kind of people that he had at that particular location, I couldn't help but sort of feel like there are millennials who support Bernie, mm-hmm. and they support him because, well, he's just Bernie.
Yeah.
He's cool. It's like it's a cool thing to do.
Yeah, it's ironical.
And they don't really
too.
Know anything about him,
right.
Like other than in sort of broad terms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, political revolution, feel the burn. He's going to, you know, wealth inequality.
Yeah, well, he's,
okay,
you know.
Okay, but what are you going to do? What are his policies? What's his policy with this particular subject, by the way, that doesn't have anything to do with wealth inequality? Something else. Mm-hmm. You know, what's his foreign policy?
Yeah.
Prescriptions. Give me an idea there. What about this other thing that I care about? Bernie doesn't really get into those. His entire shtick is about wealth inequality because that has been his obsession for pretty much his entire life.
That's true. I mean, the fact of the matter is that he is Bernie Sanders for millennials is the, let's face it, he's the ironic candidate. You know, for Bernie Sanders support, I'm talking about the base of the Bernie Sanders supporters who are, you know, the 18 to 29 year olds who are basically, you know, they see that he's from Brooklyn. You know, he's 70.
Exactly.
He's Brooklyn, which is the heart of sort of millennial hipster culture.
Oh, yeah.
Then you have the fact that he's 74 years old. You know, it's just it's ironic to be supporting the 74-year-old nebbishy Jewish guy who's also a Democratic socialist. It's just there's something about that.
Exactly. That's it. Exactly. And I love, you know, Courtney Anlow over at Pajiba.com wrote this really, really fun piece where she just she writes in all caps. Yeah. But one of the things that she brings up that I f***ing love is that stupid meme that's going around where you plug in a subject, some cool subject, and then Bernie has this amazingly cool dissertation on it, and Hillary says something really cheesy. Put in like jazz legends, and Bernie talks about, you know, it's supposed to be like, you know, their positions on them, and you put in like jazz legends, and Bernie says, you know, it writes out on the side. It's like, you know, but I'm a very big fan of, you know, John Coltrane. I feel like, you know, it's the true great, this is the true great American art form, and just runs down all of these jazz giants.
Yeah.
And then Hillary Clinton says, I like Kenny G.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I saw this.
You know, I mean, and that's it. He's the cool guy.
A Bernie guy sent me one about Rush. We played Rush coming out of the commercial there for a second. Yeah. It was the Bernie Sanders response was something like, yeah, Rush writes complex themes based on fantasy and social commentary. And then Hillary Clinton says, I like Tom Sawyer.
Yeah. And I mean, that's it exactly.
And so there's a cool factor, right? They're trying to underscore a cool factor.
Yeah, and by the way, I thought Obama was cool. And by the way, I thought Bill Clinton was cool. And that's one of the reasons I got on board with him. Yeah. I got on board with him because I was 22 years old and it was like, you know what? He wants to, you know, he's like me. He's, you know, he's like me. He's developmentally stunted and loves to get blown.
Yeah. Right. And by the way.
I mean, exactly.
Poor Bill Clinton. I mean, did he... He looked so frail last night, standing behind Hillary, with his mouth just hanging open. You know, just like, oh my God, what happened? And then he was speaking today live, and they were carrying it on MSNBC. And he just sounds terrible. I mean, I know he had some heart problems, and he's on a very strict diet because of those heart problems. I felt bad. I felt bad. And by the way, speaking of Hillary Clinton's speech last night, how about... the BALLS on Hillary Clinton for deliberately, and it had to have been deliberately interrupting Ted Cruz's victory speech with her speech.
Yeah.
That was so alpha of her. F you, Ted Cruz.
But of course she got called like a liar by the Bernie people because she jumped the gun.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Yes, I agree. I really loved that she just won up Ted Cruz.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was a little early given the fact that there was really, I mean, we were talking about a 3-point difference when she was speaking. Right. So I was like, what is she going to do? Because, of course, you know, by the way, if you're watching MSNBC, this is your first time around, and you see Andrea Mitchell talking dirt about the Clintons, like, the Clintons declared victory, and maybe it was premature. Got to imagine this. Got to know this. Andrea Mitchell has had a hard-on for the Clintons since the 90s. She was the White House correspondent for NBC News during the Monica Lewinsky scandal, and it was her basic... It was like her claim to fame. It was like her...
Yeah.
thing, like scandal mongering the Clintons, kind of like, you know, who else is like that is Andrew Sullivan hates the Clintons and loves it anytime there's a Clinton scandal. Andrea Mitchell, it's like when there's something funky going on with the Clintons, she is in her element. Now I'm not saying that the Clintons are innocent. The Clintons are dirty bastards. There's no two ways about it. You look at, like, I stand by everything I wrote about the Clintons in 2008 during that primary season, which was,
I think, during that primary season, though, Clinton herself behaved a hell of a lot worse than she is right now.
That is true. That is true. But then she was also way farther behind the eight ball.
This is true. And she's also, you know, at that time she was on the, under the direction of scumbag Mark Penn.
Mark Penn. That's right.
God. Yeah, who I noticed she's kept very, very far away from her this time.
Oh, yes. So, I mean, I know that to a certain degree, the Clintons are, I mean, the Clintons will take every opportunity they can. They will skirt that fine line between legal and illegal if they have to. They'll say incendiary things. They'll blurt out dog whistles. They'll do whatever they have to do in order to win. And you know what? Quite honestly, I don't hate that.
I don't either. That's, they are politicians.
Yes.
They are politicians. This is what politicians do. And by the way, if you don't think that Bernie wants to win, oh my God, you're crazy. You're more naive than I thought.
Oh yeah, yeah. And Bernie's going to pull all those same stunts. One other warning. This is a big warning to Bernie Sanders supporters who by this point are no longer listening to the show. So I don't even know what I'm doing by saying this.
Yeah.
But get ready for this one too. Bernie Sanders came damn close to winning Iowa. He's going to win New Hampshire. Get ready for the media vetting to occur starting now. And it is going to be hard, and it is going to be, in some cases, scathing. I mean, the press has heretofore not vetted Bernie Sanders at all because they didn't really take his candidacy seriously. Now that he's a serious contender in this thing, and the electoral politics has come to pass in order to show that, get ready, because the digging is going to begin.
Right.
And it's not, you know what? It's not because the press hates Bernie Sanders. It's because this is what they do.
And if you think Bernie doesn't have skeletons in his closet the way Clinton does, ho, you are sorely fucking mistaken.
Yeah,
Once they open that up and they get into his quote-unquote radical past, and he's got so much of that, they are going to eat him. That's what I said about Republicans. I'm like, once Republicans turn on him and he's no longer their foil that they can use to take down Clinton, oh, dear God, they're going to rip him to shreds.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And get ready, because you don't get to the presidential level in American politics without greasing some palms, without bending the rules a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, Obama's been pretty clean. No doubt about that. So it is possible. But I'm just saying, gird your loins. It's happening starting right now. Okay, more of this on the Postmortem Show at patreon.com/Bob and Chez. See you there. Bye-bye.
This is an outrage. I demand an investigation. Turn those machines back on! Turn those machines back on!